Say goodbye to your credit card rewards. Greedy corporate mega stores, led by Walmart and Target, are pushing for a law in Congress to take away your hard-earned cash back and travel points to line their pockets. The Durbin-Marshall credit card bill would enact harmful credit card routing mandates that would end credit card rewards as we know it. If you love your credit card rewards, tell your lawmakers, hands off my rewards. Tell them to oppose the Durbin-Marshall credit card bill.
Hello, everyone, and welcome back to 1001 Heroes, Legends, Histories, and Mysteries. As promised, we have a very special guest here today, Bill Bentinson, and Butch Cassidy was his great-granduncle. He's the author of Butch Cassidy, My Uncle, and hopefully he's going to shed some light on a lot of the questions that we have regarding Butch Cassidy, the Sundance Kid, Edda, and the Wild Bunch. Bill, how you doing today?
Doing good.
Well, good. I'm hoping you can introduce yourself and your background and what got you, obviously your genealogy got you into this to begin with, but what really inspired you to go forward with research on this? You've been doing it a long time, as I understand.
Yeah, so I grew up hearing the stories, and I mean, my great-grandma, Butch's sister, lived to be 96 years old. I was 15 when she passed away, so I grew up hearing stories from her and always interested in the Old West and that. And when I graduated from college, I have a degree in mechanical engineering. I needed a diversion or something. So I started reading a lot and was like, oh, this is a lot of fun. I can read a book and don't have to derive an equation and stuff. So I just started reading and researching, got interested, and then met friends, and we went to visit the robbery sites and hideouts and, just kind of went from there. And then I decided, well, I really need to, I've done all this research for, like 20 years. I need to put it down in a book, at least for my kids and family to have. And so then I started doing the book, and that the challenge there was there's so much myth and stories, folklore associated with Butch Cassidy that, you wanted to try and cut through all that and go back to original sources and try and tell the most accurate story of his life. And so that's kind of what I did, and that's hopefully the result of the book.
Have you been able to, or have you changed any of your theories or opinions since the book? Or are you pretty much sticking with what you've got there?
Well, yeah, I'm pretty much sticking with what I have. And we've done, as we, as I find new information and that, I've done edits to the book. So the book is in its third edition. And that's the fun part of it is we're still finding pieces to the puzzle, as they digitize old newspapers, different records are become available. You find new information and so you update that information. So, and correct some of the things that were wrong. But the basic theories I still stand by.
How about starting off by giving us a description of Butch Cassidy? I did explain it in part one, but I'd like it from your point of view just to describe what kind of guy he was, how he was able to keep a lot of really hard cases loyal to him, and how he became probably the most successful train robber in terms of never really getting caught. What was he like?
Well, I think part of what set him apart from others was he grew up in a loving family. He wasn't from a broken home. He didn't have, tendencies to be a psycho or whatever. He liked people, and he was charismatic in his personality, so he easily made friends, and that seemed to instill loyalty from people because they liked him and they saw that he was, I think, inherently a good person. He was raised to be a good Christian, and obviously he chose a different path, but I think the basis of his upbringing really led to his success and setting him apart from other outlaws. Now, I think he was a bright individual, and he went to great lengths to plan robberies and to, I mean, that's the one thing that as I researched his life, I really realized that, you know, he spent months and months planning these robberies, and then the escapes, you know, took enormous amount of planning and people. There was people that had to man relays, and, you know, he had to get insider information on when the loots were going to be available on the trains and whatnot. Yeah, I don't know that I fully appreciated that just, you know, growing up hearing those stories. So I really gained the respect for, you know, the planning and the great lengths that he went to see that he had success. And I think that led to his continued success over time. Now, another pattern in his life was that when he, after a robbery, the way he blended in was he would go and get a job on a ranch and work for a ranch. And he had grown up on a ranch. He knew how to work hard, and people, you know, he wasn't afraid of hard work, and people liked him and they trusted him, and he was able to blend in. I think that really helped lead to his success. Now, I think he also, because of his personality, he was able to, you know, some people are just people, or people persons or whatever, that can relate to people. And I think he was able to relate to different people. You know, like Kid Curry was known as a killer, but I don't know, and kind of studying a little bit of him, I don't know that he certainly started out that way. You know, different things happened in his life, and members of his family were killed, and he, you know, became psychotic in some ways, but you know, he wasn't that way initially. And I think Butch could relate to people, and through that was able to instill trust in different people, and you know, they trusted him, they liked him, and that included the people in his gang and people on the outside that would protect him.
From what I've read, it looks like he didn't kill any lawmen in this whole process. Is that correct?
No, I think that's correct. Yeah, as far as we know, he didn't kill anybody. Now, depending on what you believe happened to him, there was,
right,
if you believe he was killed in San Vicente, there was some policemen killed in that, but I personally don't believe that he was involved in that. I think that was somebody else, but that's another story.
Now, we did talk about an account in part one where a husband-wife team? It was a research team, man and woman, who went to San Vicente and dug up the remains of two what they felt were Americans. And sent the DNA back for testing, but they said that the DNA testing indicated just one person, and that was a German miner who had been buried in that same site. Did I get that
right,
correct?
Yeah, that was Dan Buck and Ann Meadows. And another individual that was involved in that program, it was a Nova production on PBS in the early 90s, was Larry Pointer. And in talking to Larry Pointer, he said that they were nearly 100% confident they had the right individuals, because the story was that Butch, you know, they were down to their last few rounds of ammo. Butch shot Sundance in the forehead because he was wounded, and then put the gun to his temple and killed himself. And the skeletal remains of those two that they dug up had injuries that matched that story. And so, and they found lead tracing in the holes in the skulls. And so they were, you know, 99% sure they had the right individuals. Now, when they did the actual testing, it was negative. It was neither Butch or Sundance. And then the story came out, well, one was a German miner that was thawing out dynamite and blew himself up. And it's like, well, how do you get wounds in your skull that have lead tracing if you blew up dynamite? But I kind of think that they found the two individuals that robbed the payroll, but it just wasn't Butch and Sundance, and so the story got spun differently.
Yeah, it's kind of what it looks like. It just raises a question, though, if they, you know, dug up two skeletons, they said they were lying end to end. How in the world did we come up with one German miner out of two people?
Right.
That, and somewhere right. that story got twisted or convoluted where we're not getting the whole thing. But I have a hunch if the DNA of Cassidy or Longobaugh did come up, or Parker or Longobaugh did come up, I think we would know it. So it right. kind of just left that open forever.
Right.
Did they take your DNA sample for that study?
No, it was a cousin of mine that actually supplied the DNA for that.
When you visited some of the outlaw locations, which ones have you personally seen and been in?
Well, you know, everything in the West, you know, Hole in the Wall, Brown's Park, Robber's Roost, you know, and then the different robbery sites I've been to. And I did, in 2007, went to Argentina to see his ranch.
Oh, my gosh.
In Chubut.
That's a fascinating story. What ended up with the ownership on that ranch? Did he sell it while he was still alive?
Well, they were never able to obtain ownership of the land when they were there. It's even really difficult now in Argentina to, you know, it takes many years to obtain ownership to the land. So they never actually had ownership of the land. And today there's a nearby town called Cholila, and they own the land that the cabin's on, and they've restored the cabin and kind of opened it up as a tourist site.
So neither their names nor Etta's name was ever on any kind of paperwork with regard to that that land or that property? Because I thought she was granted 2,500 acres of that.
Well, they were certainly signing papers to obtain ownership of that land, that they were in the process of that. In fact, there's documents that they signed on the day of a robbery that occurred in Rio Gallegos that they were suspected of participating in. And, you know, it gave proof that they were at the ranch when that occurred. But, yeah, they had signed papers to obtain that ownership, but never, in fact, obtained that land.
Say goodbye to your credit card rewards. Greedy corporate mega stores, led by Walmart and Target, are pushing for a law in Congress to take away your hard-earned cash back and travel points to line their pockets. The Durbin-Marshall credit card bill would enact harmful credit card routing mandates that would end credit card rewards as we know it. If you love your credit card rewards, tell your lawmakers, hands off my rewards. Tell them to oppose the Durbin-Marshall credit card bill.
So what do you believe happened? What do you believe caused them to leave Argentina? And also, what do you believe happened with Etta?
Okay, so they went down there after the turn of the century, 1901. They established that ranch in the Patagonia area. It's quite a remote area even today. It's at the base of the Andes, and lived there in relative peace for about 3 years. And I don't know if they got bored or what, but there were two local guys that became their friends. And my thoughts are that they taught those two how to rob a bank. And they went to Rio Gallegos, which is about 700 miles away from their ranch in southern Argentina, and robbed the bank. And it had the earmarkings or trademarks of their robberies with you know, fresh relays of horses for their escape and that. While they were down there, the Pinkertons continued to track them and were reading the mail here in the United States as they wrote letters home. And so they were able to figure out where they were at. They sent an agent to Buenos Aires, figured out where they were at. They came back, contacted the banks and railroads and wanted them to fund them to go down and capture them. The banks and railroads didn't want anything to do with it because they were out of their hair. They, you know, we're not losing any more money. They're gone. You know, just let them be. And so the Pinkertons generated a bunch of wanted posters in Spanish, notified the local police, and said if there's ever a robbery, these two notorious outlaws are likely responsible. And so when Rio Gallegos happened, then they suspected they were involved in it. So they went to question them. And because they were so well established in the community, some of their good friends were the Hammonds, and Mrs. Hammond's brother was the chief of police in the area, and they got tipped off that they were going to come and question them, and so they decided to leave the area. They escaped into Chile and then worked their way north, and they were in southern Bolivia, the Pisa area. So November 1906 is when a payroll robbery occurred, and two gringos were cornered in San Vicente and killed through a gun battle, and those two individuals were buried in the San Vicente cemetery. They were never identified. They were just buried as unknown gringos, and they did have a good friend in the area that was an American mining engineer, and that was Percy Siebert, and he did speak with a magazine author and, you know, said that these two that were buried were likely Butch and Sundance, and that's really kind of how the story got out there, that they'd been killed. Now, prior to that time, I think it was 1904, 1905, Sundance took Etta Place back to the U.S., to San Francisco, and she was rumored to be ill. You know, there's rumors that maybe she was pregnant. And really, from there, she kind of disappeared into history, and we really don't know what happened to her.
Yeah, that's one of the biggest mysteries in the West, along with what really did happen to Butch and Sundance. And I think you're going to fill us in on that in just a minute. I've always, in the research that I've done, I've always felt that Cassidy was a smart, smart guy. And I think you're right when you kind of hinted at the fact that he and Sundance might have set up two guys, knowing that they were going to screw up one way or the other, or maybe even tipping off the federal troops as to where those guys were. Maybe they had arranged, they had said, we'll meet you at this point after you've accomplished this, this, and this, and they didn't meet them. Maybe that's how they ended up at that boarding house in San Vicente. But I don't think it was those two. I think you're right on that. I'm hoping you can kind of fill us in on some of the better theories as to where they ended up living, and did they get back to visit their friends and relatives?
I can tell you in terms of the Parker family what we believe, and in terms of Butch Cassidy. So in the fall of 1925, he did visit his family in Circleville, Utah, and Lula was there, and he spent about 2 weeks with the family and then left and stayed in touch through letters, and they were always very careful to destroy those letters. And their father was still alive at the time, and he made them make a family pact that they wouldn't talk about his visit. And they would just go along with the stories that he'd been killed in South America so that he could be left alone and live out the remainder of his days. And she said that he died in the fall of 1937 in the Northwest. Now, there was an individual that appears to be a bit of a... His name was William T. Phillips, and he died in the fall of 37 in the Northwest up in the Spokane area. And he was actually in prison at the same time as Butch in Wyoming, in Laramie, Wyoming. And so they knew each other, and he had some of the looks of Butch. And so he passed off himself as being Butch. And there are accounts where he went and visited individuals in Wyoming and fooled some people. But I have a hard time with that, because I think Butch was still around visiting some of his friends, and it's possible the two worked together. But I don't believe that this William T. Phillips could, I mean, some people have even said that, you know, maybe he was the one that visited the Parker family. And I don't believe that an individual like that could fool his own family, his own father.
No.
Or some of his good friends that knew him before he went to South America. And there are a number of friends in Wyoming that swore he visited them in the 1930s. One was Josie Bassett. He worked for the Bassett family in Browns Park. And she said that both Butch and Elsie Lay, his good friend Elsie Lay, visited her on two different occasions in Bags, Wyoming and Rock Springs. And, you know, I think there's a number of reliable eyewitness accounts that confirm that he did make it back to the U.S. Now, in terms of Sundance, that's a little less clear to me, and I don't purport to be a Sundance expert. I mean, my tie is to Butch Cassidy, and that's really where I've put my efforts. I do am friends with the Longaboth family, and the ones that are most vocal is Donna and Paul Ernst, who are from Pennsylvania area, and they believe that he was killed in South America. But and the main reason they believe that is because he was writing to his sister, Samantha, and after the gun battle happened in November of 1908, then those letters stopped, and so they think that he was killed. Now, I've also heard from others within the Longaboth family that's not necessarily true, that those letters continue on for a time. So, you know, I don't know. Butch, when he visited his family, he said that the two of them got separated and he wasn't sure what had happened to Sundance. And, you know, there's a number of different theories. There was an individual that died in the 50s in the Utah State Prison that some people think he was the Sundance Kid. His name was Hiram Beebe. I personally don't believe that. He's buried in the Salt Lake Cemetery, so they can. I know there's been some people wanting to dig his grave up and do DNA testing. And so with Butch's demise, that's one thing that Lula said she knew where he was buried, but she would never say where he was buried because she was concerned that people would dig his grave up. And in the early 1970s, the Price Utah Cemetery was being expanded as it was growing, and they used to bury the outlaws outside of the cemetery boundaries. And as that cemetery boundary grew, then they were encompassed within the cemetery, and they dug up those graves to reinter them. And they had pictures in the newspaper of them holding, you know, the skulls and different things. And Lula saw that, and it really bothered her that she thought that was a great disrespect to the dead.
Mm-hmm.
And she was determined not to reveal where he was buried. So, and she didn't want people to put a big monument and idolize him because of the life that he had led. But and that's one thing, like with grandkids and that, she always reminded us that she loved her brother. He was her brother, but he did choose a different path, and he was an outlaw.
Yep.
He broke the law, and he broke his mother's heart, you know. His mother was quite disturbed by that. She remembered her mother walking the fields of their ranch, crying over her wayward son.
Mm-hmm.
She actually had two different sons that chose that path. The next youngest one after Butch was also involved. He got captured quite early, so he wasn't as well known. But you know, it was pretty upsetting to the family that they had chose those paths. So anyway.
What, I think there is a woman named Grace who says she had who said she went up through the Sundance Kid's side, through his father's side, and did find DNA. Do you know anything about that story?
Yeah, Marilyn Grace. Yeah, she's a little bit different.
Okay.
So they exhumed a grave over in Duchesne, Utah, and they some people think that was a Sundance Kid. His name was Henry Long. And I've read the stories. I know Jerry Nickel, who is related to this Henry Long, and I just don't buy that individual was Harry Longaboth. The Longaboth family doesn't recognize him as a relative. I think maybe Henry Long was involved with the Wild Bunch, but I personally don't think he was Harry Longaboth. And so Marilyn is also, she's also working on trying to dig up Butch's remains down near Circleville, and so far hasn't succeeded in that, but she would really like me to be involved, and I don't want any part of digging up Butch's grave.
So. Yeah, kind of honor your family. I don't think they wanted it either.
Exactly. So,
here's a big question. Butch was very successful, and they had taken in a lot of money, and I know he gave shares to all the people who were involved in the jobs, but he had to have accumulated a lot of money. He probably didn't trust banks. Whatever happened to that? Are there any treasury? Are there any treasure legends out there that people have been chasing down?
Well, yeah, of course there is. There's stories that there's buried gold, that are still out there that people are trying to chase. None of that's ever been found. I don't know that he left a lot behind. I think when he had it, he spent it pretty freely. I know when they had determined to go to South America that they really started to build a nest egg to have a ranch down there and to start over. And so I think a lot of that, they did actually make a deposit in a bank in Buenos Aires, and they, instead of making withdrawals all the time, they actually put money in the bank there so that they could establish their ranch in Patagonia. So, after his very first bank robbery in Telluride, he went up into Wyoming and he had a horse ranch up there. And, the newspaper accounts talked about him gambling pretty freely, that he had seemed to have a lot of money. And I'm sure he just kind of, went through it. And so when the funds got low, then they went and planned another robbery. So,
and last question I have for you is, Etta Place, tell me what you believe happened to her based on everything you've come across in your last 20 years of research.
Well, I wish I had the key to what happened. And there's many theories out there, but I personally don't really know. I think she went, she came back to San Francisco, and there was rumors that she went to the Denver area. I think she just lived out her days, changed her name, and possible she had a child and raised that child and just lived out her days. I don't, and tried to distance herself from her past. But I don't really know. No one really knows what happened to her.
I think I like the theory of Madeline Wilson, who worked at Fanny's Bordello, in terms of being the possible match. But she sure did leave a mystery behind her.
So what happened to this individual from Fanny Porter's?
Madeline Wilson would have been approximately born around 1878, which would have put her at 22 years old when she went to New York City. I think it was the first time with Sundance. Right. And they took that picture at DeYoung's and stopped at Tiffany's, and he gave her that diamond stick pin, the whole deal. And what was interesting there is when they left, at one point they probably took a wagon north from New York City up to Buffalo and stopped at Dr. Pierce's Invalid Hotel and Surgical Center, was what he called it. It was like a six-story, very lavishly decorated building. And Dr. Pierce had made his millions, literally, on selling little pills that were...
Right. There's still old barns in the West that have Dr. Pierce's advertisement on the side of them. He was quite prominent during that, during his time. So,
yeah, he was a big deal. And in that surgery center, he had 17 surgeons working for him. And because abortions were, I don't even know if the word was being used back in those days, but those 17 surgeons were experts in female parts. And one of those parts that they claimed to heal problems with was the uterus. So I'm sure if there were any live fetuses anywhere near that uterus, that was a problem to be solved back in those days, and those guys probably did it for the right amount of money. So it could have been, and they also tried to cure venereal diseases of all types, the whole deal. But basically they just called it women's weaknesses. Right. Well, I'm going to honor your time. I think you've been very, very generous with me. Is there anything more you'd like to share that maybe we didn't cover?
Well, there's lots of things in my book.
Well, put a few teasers out there, and we'll get some people to buy your book.
So it's called Butch Cassidy, My Uncle. The author, I'm Bill Bettinson. It's available on Amazon. It's in hardcover in paper and also an electronic version. So, it's done well. I think people really like it. I tried to document all my research. It's been a lot of fun, and I still enjoy going around and speaking and talking and finding new information, and I'll keep updating. I'm actually working on another one that's really focused on his life in Wyoming, and I hope to have that out pretty soon. So
that sounds interesting. You were just invited to a big gathering. Was it in Idaho just last weekend?
Yeah, that was a lot of fun. We had a pretty good turnout. There's an organization called the Wild West History Association, and they have a national convention in the summer, but they do little mini roundups, they call them, during the wintertime, and this was up in a little town outside of Boise called Murphy, Idaho, that is, I believe, the county seat for Oahe County, and they had a number of speakers and a good turnout. It was a lot of fun.
Congratulations on you for going down and seeing that ranch. What was that ranch like down in Argentina?
It was kind of a dream come true. I mean, it's very reminiscent of home for him, Circleville. I mean, the climate down there is very similar. He had poplar trees, which he helped his mother plant on his home ranch in Circleville, and really had a feel of home. You know, it was... it's a beautiful area. It's at the base of the Andes. There's, spring fed creeks, and I was able to catch rainbow trout just 100 yards from his cabin, and it was beautiful.
Yeah, that sounds nice. Well, Bill, thank you so much. I appreciate it. It was great being able to meet you for this interview on the phone, and I wish you the very best with your next book as it comes out, and we'll be looking for it.
All right. I appreciate it. Appreciate your time.
Thank you for being a guest. Bye-bye.
Thank you. Bye.
Credit card rewards. Greedy corporate mega stores, led by Walmart and Target, are pushing for a law in Congress to take away your hard-earned cash back and travel points to line their pockets. The Durbin-Marshall credit card bill would enact harmful credit card routing mandates that would end credit card rewards as we know it. If you love your credit card rewards, tell your lawmakers, hands off my rewards. Tell them to oppose the Durbin-Marshall credit card bill.